Hello, you're listening to the podcast of the Walking Women event at Somerset House. Over the week of the 11th to the 17th of July 2016, the Walking Artist Network held the Walking Women Week of Events. It culminated in a weekend of screenings, talks and walks with over 40 artists presenting their work. This podcast will showcase what took place on Saturday the 16th. One major activity taking place at the weekend was the Wikipedia Editathon. Wikipedia is an important repository of shared knowledge, with its pages ranking top in Google searches. But less than 10% of its contributors identify as female, resulting in skewed content and gender bias. The Wikipedia Editathon workshop was seeking to address this gender gap. Over the weekend, visitors were asked to drop in for 20 minutes to 2 hours to improve the page of one of their favourite artists or create one from scratch. I spoke to some of the people involved in the event.
My name is Melissa Hill. We're working on the Wikipedia Editathon at Walking Women, which is an event taking place at Somerset House today. It's a project that's really aimed at bringing attention to the fact that not enough women are acting as editors on Wikipedia itself, which obviously can introduce a particular bias to the range of information that's presented on Wikipedia. And secondly, we're focusing on our particular interest, which is in the practice of walking art, which is a part of performance art generally, and creating pages specifically for female artists in this practice. This project is kind of being housed on the Walking Artists Network, and there's a resource there with a list of women artists that lack pages, so not just the people directly involved with the project, but the public as well, if they want to access that list, can start working on and creating pages to kind of get that resource up for people. This particular project is focusing on walking artists who are women, but the broader message about the project is to highlight that bias within Wikipedia, where perhaps male artists might be getting more of a profile or a higher profile than women, because what's fascinating about Wikipedia is they have such a high standard of sourcing for the material that's available to the public, that maybe we need to work harder as women to promoting our network more generally, rather than only talking about our own work and creating our own work. Perhaps we've been neglecting that networking side and raising the profile of our peers. At the moment, we're working on Kathy Turner, who is a walking artist and a researcher at the University of Exeter. And yes, we're just trying to build that page now. Another page that we built a bit earlier is for Claire Qualman, who is a walking artist and is also the founder of the Walking Artists Network. You can't use self-referential information, so you can't use the artist's own website, for example, for biographical information. They have to have been talked about by a third-party source. So they have to have appeared, ideally, in a textbook or like in a newspaper or an academic journal. So that feeds back into that whole original problem that we don't talk enough about our network generally. So when we're given a platform to write about our area of expertise, we should try to bring in, you know, our network as much as possible and talk about what they're doing and why what they're doing is important, because it feeds into the credibility of something like this.
So people don't talk about the artist in the first place and kind of written.
Exactly. So, I mean, basic stuff like their basic biography, if it's not discussed somewhere else, if a journalist doesn't say, Claire Qualman is a blah, 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 then that information doesn't pre-exist before the Wikipedia page can be written. So, for example, on her page, we weren't able to say when she was born, for example, or where she was educated. Whereas you look at Marina Abramovich's page, of course, she has a huge section of information about her upbringing, everything, yeah, which then, of course, feeds into her practice. So that's valuable information. So I find that quite interesting to, once you know that, then you know how to talk about your peers more effectively in a way that helps them.
So where do you get the information from for the artists then?
Right, so we're basically taking what information we can get and creating a page. So it's important that a page is created, then the public, anybody can go in and add to that page over time. So that's one of the great things about Wikipedia. Now it's extremely easy for the public to go in and edit a page, add to a page, correct a page. Compared to a few years ago, it was much, it was extremely hard, actually. So it's quite good to get a page created first and maybe linked within the Wiki network generally, so with performance art, walking art, you know, these categories, and get these people listed appropriately.
So if it's already there, it's easier to update than if it's not there at all.
Yeah, exactly, because creating a page from scratch is phenomenally hard work, but for someone to go in and add one citation or change one little thing, it's not a lot of work once the page is created.
My name's Sonia, Sonia Overall.
And how did you get involved with this project?
Well, I've been a member of the Walking Artists Network, and I've also set up a Women Who Walk network. So I've gradually got to know lots of people who are involved in this, because I use walking in my writing and teaching practice. So it's great to come and meet lots of other people doing the same kind of thing.
So I've just been hearing about creating a Wikipedia page for the first time.
Yes.
I believe you've been doing that.
That's what I've been doing, trying to create a page for Kathy Turner, yes.
Okay. Could you tell me about that experience? Have you ever done it before?
I've never done it before. It was a very frustrating start, but we're on a roll now. We think we've cracked the code and we're starting to put information in. So it's quite, it's exciting once it starts picking up, yeah.
So what does it actually entail?
Well, we're trying to summarise the artist's practice, but we're also trying to find third-party sources that refer to her. And I think this, the difficulty of finding that is quite indicative of the whole problem of trying to demonstrate that women are doing this, because it's quite hard to find specific references to her.
So where are you finding these references?
Well, we've got this fantastic display today from the Larder Library, which is what we're using at the moment, and that's certainly giving us plenty of places to look.
So, are there a lot of people on your list of artists to update?
It's a long list. I don't know how much we're going to achieve, but now we've got rolling, I think we'll do as much as we can. And I think it's people have told me this is quite an addictive practice, so I shall probably be going away and doing a bit more next week when I should be writing or doing something else.
Do you think that this is something that people should be more aware of and be doing themselves?
Oh, yes, definitely. And it's not something I would ever have thought of doing before. But now I can see that, you know, I can see the how wonderful it is to have generated a page, to see what people produced last week and see it in progress. Yeah, definitely something worth doing.
Is the actual creation of the page, is it quite a long process? Is it a form?
The practicalities become particularly frustrating when you're trying to create citations for sources. But once you've got the hang of how that works, it's not so bad. So I think we've learned that the best thing to do is generate lots of text, and then, a bit like writing an academic essay, then go in and put the references in, because we were trying to do it as we went, and that's, we've been grinding our teeth a bit. So.
And will you be creating yourself a Wikipedia page today?
I won't be doing it for myself, but you never know, it might catch. Somebody might do one for me at some stage. That would be lovely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Walk a Mile in Her Veil is an introspection of Arab identity through the lens of the veil and its user, inviting visitors to try on the veil and understand firsthand the cultural and social motives behind it. I spoke to Yasmin Sabri about the piece.
So my name is Yasmin Sabri, and my work is called Walk a Mile in Her Veil. And I was looking at how cultural and media imperialism affects the way we view women, and we view, sorry, minorities in general, and veiled women in particular. With the rise in the refugee crisis problems and the terrorist attacks around the world, people are connecting this symbol that I affiliate to with all these big, terrible problems, and I don't think it's fair for such a person to carry so many problems. And so I'm inviting people to play around with this garment in a playful way and understand the cultural, social, and even feminist reasons behind choosing to wear this garment. I'm not in any way defending the religious aspect of it, but I'm just defending the woman underneath and saying that telling her what to wear is just as oppressive as forcing her to wear one of these veils.
The people who have already taken part in project,
yeah.
What kind of feedback have they given you about their experience?
Well, everything's been positive, really, because it actually is quite astounding how many reasons there are for women to wear them, and it's quite interesting to start learning them and seeing it as more of an empowering statement rather than one that disempowers the woman and removes power from her.
So what should people do?
Well, they should just try it on. There's a lot of different kinds of veils from different cultures and different social classes and different backgrounds. And so they can just try it on, take a picture, walk around with it. I'm doing tours and a talk tomorrow as well. So there's a lot of ways to get to interact with this. And there's a video as well of me and the walks I've been taking and leading people around London, Brighton, Bristol, and Luton. So yeah, there's a lot of ways they can interact with it.
Could you show me and talk me through some of the differences?
Yes, sure. So obviously, this one, these are just veils, and the veils are the ones that just cover the head, and these are predominantly in like Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, whereas this, where they cover the face except for the eyes, this is predominantly in Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan, Pakistan, and a lot of reasons that why people wear them there is, well, obviously Saudi Arabia, they have to, but in other areas it's for anonymity so that no one can tell who they are. It's more safe for them. A lot of countries like Africa or Asia wear very colorful garments, and it's to do with more respect or formal kind of dress wear, and more married women tend to wear it. But also I brought like a variety of them to show that just like women in the West, or me even, who's a bit of both, chooses what to wear and decides, you know, on different styles, the women who wear the veil are also like, it's the same kind of experience for them to try out something new and just play around with the garment.
Have you heard many women who actually wear veils themselves coming over and trying that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I did, because I've done a lot of interviews, and obviously a lot of people have different reasons for wearing it, but it's also interesting to try out something else and wearing it, because the experience does change. Like when I've worn the veil that just covers the head and I walked out in the street, it's much different when wearing the niqab or the burqa that covers your entire face or just your eyes.
This was the talk Yasmin gave the next day.
I'm going to talk to you about my piece, Walk a Mile in Her Veil, within the context of my practice. So it all started with this brilliant film, Manufacturing Consent, which basically shows us how social media and mass media affects our personalities, our wants, our needs, and the way we perceive people. And that was really moving for me, because in this age of technology, I see that a lot of people are affected by what they see without actually going in depth and taking the time to study what they're reading and see the truth of it. And so I was looking at cultural imperialism and media imperialism and the way it affects us and the way it creates divides between people and creates borders rather than unifying people. So I was reading this book, Empathy, and I've always found myself to be a very empathetic person, and I'm surprised when I see people that aren't empathetic, because I think it's such a natural thing. But it's actually something you need to take care of and practice in order for it to grow within you. And one of the ways to become more empathetic is to have conversations as well as to have experiences. So to go out and try something new. In the book, they say, through film and photographs, we can journey into the lives of persecuted minorities. But because we're bombarded with so much footage every day, that you're not really journeying and you're not really seeing. And so I went a step further and said that through art and design, you can experience it. And so I started looking at the veil, because throughout the media, veiled women were stigmatized, and their image was attached to the terrorist attacks that were happening around the world and the refugee crisis. And I just, for me, the veil is, because I'm Jordanian and because in my country it's common to see veiled women, for me the veil is a symbol of love and affection. And actually, whenever I'm walking the streets, and I know I'm homesick when I see a veiled woman and I want to hug her. But it even surprised me to see the actual depth and reasons behind wearing this garment. There's so many cultural, social, political reasons, even feminist reasons. And I think as long as someone chooses to do something or to wear something, then it's completely fine. Be it just a headscarf or a full burqa. And so I started looking at different ways cultures wear it, as well as different rules around the world that forces women to wear the burqa or force them not to wear it. And I think both are equally as oppressive, because I think at the end of the day, a woman should have autonomy over herself and the freedom to choose whatever she wants without judgment. And so I decided to walk a mile in her veil in order to experience this woman I was so eager to defend, because I don't wear the veil, I've never worn it. So I wanted to experience even the burqa and the niqab to see what it feels like. So I started going on walks in London, Bristol, Bath, Luton, wearing different layers or levels. So just the headscarf, one time with my eyes showing and one time with the entire thing. And what I realized was something very strange. I realized how much the male gaze is actually effective, how much it actually affects us. And once I wore it, I kind of become a non-human. So people stopped actually completely looking at me and completely ignoring me. And that was such a quite a strong and interesting experience to realize that once I was not offering sexuality, because this garment desexualizes you completely, that you are no longer something people observe. And so this movie, Return to Homs, is a point of view movie of the struggle of the Syrian people and the refugees. And it really moved me because I wanted everyone to have a point of view experience and not just see me walking in it. So I started inviting my friends to go on walks with me around the UK, as well as me going into places and interacting with people to see how they, once they see how bubbly I am and how talkative I am, that even when I am veiled or completely in a burqa, I'm not defined by what I'm wearing. And so I started inviting all my friends to try it on in a more fun and playful way and understand that it's actually just a garment and it's just a piece of fabric and it does not define the person within, and that you should not actually make assumptions before you actually know that person. And I think even invited males to try it on, because I think at the end of the day, if we want to practice empathy, then we need to practice it together as a community and not be him against her. It's all of us together, because that's what I'm arguing, that empathy is breaking down boundaries. I was showing this piece a couple of weeks ago at the Royal College of Art, and the piece and myself got attacked, and that was actually something very shocking and eye-opening, because before that, when I first wore it and went to the streets, I was very nervous and I was very scared. Because I'm ashamed to say that even I made assumptions about these women and why they wore it and how it felt. But after trying it on, I realized that it's actually much more normal than I expected, which was very strange to be dressed in one black suit and feeling like it's okay and forgetting that I'm wearing it. And so after this attack, I felt quite shocked, because I've been living in London for 6 years and I've never in my life experienced racism at all. And to experience it so violently, and she was not only attacking me as an Arab Muslim woman, she was attacking everyone. So even Europeans, Welsh people, everyone that was not her was being attacked. And I think that's very dangerous. And I'm afraid to say, but I think it's actually a result of the Brexit vote. And I think it's votes like that, or not votes like that, but thoughts like that, that people are divided, are very wrong, because yes, the Brexit has a lot of like economic and political implications, but people were focusing on the negative part, which is dividing people rather than understanding the full scope of the reason. I was looking at the rise in racism, and I think I want to continue this project and go on walks now that that's happened, to see how people change from such votes and how they feel like it's okay to be even more bigoted towards certain kinds of people. And so I've been taking people on tours and walks by themselves. So if you guys all want to try it, you're more than welcome to. And I think we should all be more empathetic towards one another and actually go out and experience being other people, so that we can become kinder human beings and hopefully make the world a better place. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Throughout the day, many artists spoke during Petra Kucha sessions. There isn't enough time to play them all now, so here are some highlights.
Well, I'm really delighted to open our first session of Petra Kucha Quickfire Artist Talks. So this is the first lot, so we'll see how we go. I think everybody's prepped and as ready as they possibly can be. So So in this session we have Romany Reagan, Nusha Pavko, Helen Billinghurst, Celia Johnson, Nimi Naidu, Nathania Hartley and Barbara Dean, who are all going to be speaking about their work and its relationship to walking in such a diverse and varied range of ways. It's really exciting to see.
The famous author and walker Ian Sinclair believes that Stoke Newington is so weird and mysterious because it sits atop a long-lost Hackney Brook River. The Victorians covered it over and turned Hackney Brook River into a sewer, as they were so fond of doing of so many rivers, creating a subterranean water world that flows unnoticed under London today. The northern boundary of Abney Park Cemetery is defined by the course of this river. Although you can no longer see it, it is still there, right now, flowing quietly in the darkness. When the cemetery land was still part of Abney Manor, Sir Isaac Watts was particularly taken by a heronry on the island that was in the river, and he took his inspiration for writing his hymns from afternoons spent there. A beautiful river with an island of herons was walled up and turned into a sewer, and this entombed river spirit suffers from her subverted purpose. Once flowing freely out in the cool air, supporting a community of herons that nested on her little island, now river spirit has no light or creatures for company.
So this is how it started. I was basically trying to kind of establish a connection with the wall, hugging the wall somehow, and then drawing, you know, a line around me, which was much harder than what I thought in my mind. It was a very good idea. And then I realized I'm not as stretchy as I would like to be. And I was basically just walking from the wall to the floor and back for 2 hours. So then in the process, some drawings were made on the wall. It was a little bit tiring as well. And then I really like this image, actually, because it was almost like I was creating two parents. So I was walking from one to another and then thinking about my mom, my dad. You know, this work is a little bit about grief, about growing up. So, yeah, I like this image a lot because it's kind of the shapes that were left after the action were quite interesting. Not intentionally, really. I didn't think so much about the drawings. And then this was the walking action. So I don't know if you're familiar with Vipassana meditation. It's a very interesting Buddhist technique where you have to do everything in slow motion and it's very difficult.
I'm very, very interested in the gaps in the landscapes and how they come about. And this comes through into my painting, as you'll see a bit later how it does. This is a very old lane that I walked with an old map. And from the map, I could see that only 30 years before, the zones on either side, which are now industrial estates, were green fields. I often return to places, if they catch my attention, to draw, because I think drawing helps me to really absorb a place and start to understand it properly. And in this drawing, you can see how I'm beginning to think about the rhythms and the patterns that are in the landscape, and this actually informs the painting. I collect a lot of materials to take back to the studio. This is chalk I've been collecting a lot because there's masses of it all around where I was brought up. And I started off by putting the chalk into white paint. And when I was using the white paint to paint with, it was referring me to the East and to my childhood memories. And likewise, this is beautiful Devon red soil. And I was grinding that up and putting it into my red paint. And that was referring me to the West and to more recent memories.
I use walking as a practice in which to take people into a place. It's all about exploring place and identity. So I walk on my own, and then sometimes I make films about solitary walking and make artworks afterwards that try and explore an engagement with place. But a lot of the time I take people into the place that I'm exploring, so I kind of facilitate walks. How I begin always is making kind of continuous line drawings as I walk. And this was done for Cardiff Contemporary, and the image on the right is translating the images, the continuous line drawings that I have on the sketchbooks, that I begin to measure a walk in terms of how many pages it is in its length. And each page becomes a layer of potentially a bigger drawing. And that was the wall drawing that was made. The place that I was working in a shop shop front that had in the 19th century been a gilders and a framers. So part of the work was also working into the, interesting what Helen was saying about gaps, the gaps in the floors and the cracks with gilding paint that was part of it. One of the things I'm really interested in is the kind of relational aspect of my practice, so the sort of interactive part of it. So as part of that, the image on the left was people were coming into the shop front and similarly mapping their journeys to the space. So my drawing was based on that, the walks that I made to the particular place, and they would tell me about their journeys.
Right, walking is how we engage with the city. We do a lot of our thinking while we're walking the streets of the city. It's where we do our thinking and what we use to make our work. So you could say the city is our studio as well as our material. I'm Debbie, this is Alyssa. I do the talking, she does the pictures. Now, we got our name from the first piece of work we made together. We're both a bit obsessed with demolitions and construction sites and with the city as places in a constant state of transformation. One of us is from Moscow, one of us is from London, and these are both cities with a lot of transformation going on. So all the change seemed outside our control and in the hands of the powerful. We wanted to invite people to imagine what they'd do if they could transform the city by bringing in a big map and inviting them to tear out or cut out pieces of the map of what they wanted to demolish. In return, they had to give us a reason. These are some of their reasons. And every time we did the work, we'd end up with two alternative maps of the city. One of them was full of holes. One of them was a map full of reasons and justifications and little tiny narratives. So our first idea had been to make a walk around these imagined destruction sites to bring this parallel city to other people. Now, this is the map of holes, you can see. And that's developed into a continuing long-term project in which we make our own journeys to explore these holes, which are kind of sites of imaginative absence, if you like. And we've been documenting them. We've been photographing them, filming them, and making lots of field recordings. So this is a kind of developing, continuing work. That's Elisa making a recording of one of the sites in East London that got demolished in Brick Lane.
As growing up within a Zionist education system, we walked for nationalistic purposes as a way of bonding with the land, which very few, if any, of our families who came from all over the world were in any way related to or familiar with, for that matter. Most of us were children of immigrants or immigrants ourselves, and we spoke countless languages as we played and walked this contested terrain. Jumping ahead to here and now, movement across Europe, and specifically children and women walking, also figure in my background. And how can I not mention this in light of what we've been witnessing in recent years, and even more so experiencing the last few weeks? Like all of us, I've watched the screens fill up with images of women and children fleeing war and destruction and walking to reach their destinations. For me, these images recall my Polish come Belgian grandmother, Rachel, who walked across Europe during World War II, getting people into safer zones, repeating increasingly treacherous journeys over and over again. So through seven walks in a holy city, I discovered a new method for my research-led practice, walking and playing. It allowed me to draw my own associative lines and connections, and too many of them to go into great detail here. I carried on investigating sites through walking and playing. For a walk commissioned by PVA Lab, I created Maschin Spielen, which means walking in Arabic and playing in German. The site chosen for the walk, which was to be silent one, was Rampisham Downs, the place where the BBC World Service transmitters, now decommissioned, still stand. The work's title took its cue from the discovery that the last two transmissions from the site were in German and Arabic, two languages that I associate with conflict and which frame my itinerant life as languages I can understand but not speak.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more, visit www.walkingartistnetwork.org.